broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are live the day after Thanksgiving. This is the broadcast for November 27th in the year of our Lord, 2020. This is hour two of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio. We're talking about a very serious issue. We talked about it all hour last hour. We highlighted the problems, the reasons, the circumstances. We're talking to Michelle Steed, who has politely agreed to stay with us a little bit this hour. She's the author of a book called Answers Behind the Red Door, Battling America's Homelessness. Homeless isn't a problem that'll go away until we find solutions. And hey, the one-size-fits-all idea simply does not work. The homeless epidemic is serious. Are sanctioned homeless camps a good idea? What are the solutions? And we find that solutions are found by those on the ground working in this day-to-day who have good, open, kind hearts, who don't have any agenda. They're not in it for the money. They're in it because they care about others. And they see people who oftentimes their lives never change because we don't take the right approach. But oftentimes, if we open the red door for them, if they open the red door and we help them, okay, it's not a one or the other. It's a together we create solutions. It's not an event, ladies and gentlemen. This is a serious issue. This has not been an issue that all of a sudden just popped up in a day. It's been decades in the making of the situation we're in. And it's going to take a while to work our way out of it. Promises of a quick fix are bogus. But there are real solutions. MichelleSteeb.com is where you can get her book. Amazon.com is where you can get her book, Answers Behind the Red Door. So let's talk about this. Are sanctioned camps a good idea? Right at the end of the last hour, we mentioned that, you know what, these camps are a great idea if you set rules and expectations and there's guidelines. In other words, you can't just set it up like a top and spin it and then walk away. You cannot set it up with too many rules or it's destined for failure because folks will want to not stay there. They'll find the outside much more pleasant at first. But there are answers, and we can put together these camps, and these camps can be a good idea if we follow principles. Michelle?
Absolutely. And as I mentioned in the book, one example that I give of a sanctioned encampment that is very, very successful is Pinellas Hope in Clearwater, Florida. It's a camp that is focused on helping those struggling with homelessness to grow, to address their underlying issues, to become productive. But they meet people where they are. People who are coming off the streets are used to being, number one, mirrored in their addiction and mental illness. And so to slowly help them see a life beyond what they've known is really, really important. But it's also important to understand that they've been living without, quote unquote, without rules. At least they think they've been living without rules, and or we have not been enforcing those rules as a society. So we really need to meet them where they are and help bring them along the path of growth to something, you know, very, very different in their future than they've experienced in their past.
The average person is thinking now, I appreciate it, Michelle. I'm glad you're on the front lines. I'm glad for you to work on a project like this. Good for you. It is important. I help in my church with a little bit of money sometimes or whatever. And I appreciate any efforts anybody makes, right? But how can we be more interactive and involved and help? And, you know, what can the average American do?
So, and I wrote this book for this particular reason. As I was traveling across the country, personal and professional reasons, and people would ask, what do you do? And I would explain to them what I did. It didn't matter who they were, old, young, Republican, Democrat, male, female, they all said, why are we in this crisis? What has fueled this? Because, you know, pre-COVID, we were in a very strong economy by most measures. So what was fueling this? And I dove into that when I left California and moved to Texas and began to really understand the policies underlying this. So first and foremost, what I would say to people is the answers are there. There's a lot of ideas for people who want to get involved and make a difference. But the first and foremost thing we need to do is recognize that there isn't a one-size-fits-all approach, and we need to work with our government leaders to understand that and to change policy. The policy right now keeps people locked into the state of homelessness and addiction and mental illness. It does not help them emerge from it. So we need to understand there isn't a one-size-fits-all solution. We need to support government leaders in changing policy. We need to not just support them, we need to strongly encourage them to do it, because right now so many of them have bought into this. The problem is exploding, and no one's holding them accountable for changing policy so that they change the situation. Right now, people need to look to their counties. Largely, counties are responsible for the implementation of health and human services, including homelessness. They need to be looking to their county officials. The counties are the ones holding the reins of responsibility. They need to be looking to them to make policy changes, and they need to demand results. They need to demand ongoing reports and results, and that will make a huge difference. I know a lot of people are very interested in volunteering. We talk very specifically about volunteering for programs that encourage growth.
Now, I want to make this very clear, because a lot of our audience, we don't believe government's the answer for a lot of things. And I agree with that. I don't want to get, I don't want to spiral down into those details, except to say, ladies and gentlemen, the reason that governments are so responsible and accountable and kind of at the driver's seat in this county by county is because they're the ones that make the zoning and the regulations and the rules and the guidelines. If I wanted to start a homeless camp tomorrow and help a lot of people, hey, I've got a lot of red tape to deal with. I can't just roll out there and do that and have everybody just be clapping and praising me for my volunteerism. It isn't that simple, right, Michelle?
You're very right. And HUD, which is the Department of Housing and Urban Development at the federal level, is the largest single funder of homelessness. So, yes, I appreciate the need for churches and the broader community get involved, but we cannot on our own, at least overnight, produce that level of funding to really help the homeless. We need to work with government to help turn this situation around.
Right. How you mentioned the last administration, meaning the Obama administration, created a one-size-fits-all. It was an abject failure, to say the least. As Donald Trump, and I don't want to make this political, but I want to understand something. Donald Trump, has he just carried that on? How has Ben Carson done as leader of HUD? Is it different? Give us a kind of an update.
Well, the president actually took note of the homeless situation in New York and L.A., last year, I think in 2019, and really started to pay attention actually when Tucker Carlson, did a lot of programs highlighting the homelessness crisis. And he and Secretary Carson started to work with the mayor of Los Angeles in particular, who reached out to them via a letter that's available on the internet. And said, we can't do this. We need your help. And so the secretary and the president were working with Mayor Garcetti. Obviously, there's some changes going on right now. So I don't know where that's going to go, but I will say at the federal level, USCHC, which is the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness, USCHC and HUD worked together to compile data. Homelessness data over the last decade. And they just released a report. It's called Expanding the Toolbox. You can Google it at, you can Google it and pull it up. And what they're showing is what I shared at the beginning of the segment, that homelessness has spiraled out of control. It's grown by 16% across the country, despite a 200% spending increase. And they make some recommendations, many of which we include in the book, not because we collaborated, but because they're very practical, solutions that we've learned from being on the ground level. So I encourage people to look at that report. I encourage people to purchase Answers Behind the Red Door, because the answers are there, and we're very, very prescriptive in terms of what people can do on their own.
All right. I've done my best to kind of cover what I think is really an understanding, an importance, a solution, point people to the right directions. Michelle Steeb is the website that you want to go to.
Yes.
S-T-E-E-B?
S-T-E-E-B.com.
MichelleSteeb.com. Michelle has one L, right?
Yes.
All right. And you can go there and you can get her book, Answers Behind the Red Door. And there's really a bunch of solutions there. It's a plea. It's a cry out to the American people to say, set aside everything and let's get together on this thing. Let's open the red door together. Let's close it behind those who go through it voluntarily, and let's support them in every way we possibly can. And it's working with government, it's private sector, it's churches, it's everyone to the round table for solutions, Michelle.
Yes, and that is so important. We are all needed to turn this crisis around. We all need to come together and work together.
Michelle, thank you so much. We'll have you back.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Likewise.
All right, there she goes, ladies and gentlemen, doing a phenomenal job. This is not an issue to be ignored, folks. It's our prayer that you don't just hear a radio show and go, oh, that's horrible, and let it go. That you actually do something about it. Wherever you are, stand.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
All right, Kirk Crosby with me, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, sir.
Buenos dias. Greetings and salutations. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Thank you, Sam.
Our interview with Michelle is timely and critical as we are just past Thanksgiving. As we approach the Christmas season, it's really time to understand this. And I remember I was on the radio a couple of years ago with you, Kurt, and someone brought up homelessness, and many of the comments that I made, people were not happy with. I basically said, hey, you know what? There's not a whole lot we can do about it. And I'm sad to have said that, although I think my point's still true. The average American struggles to do anything about it because we're so far away from it. We don't understand it. We don't know what the solutions are. It's somewhat an unsavory involvement to where we're not comfortable. And so I don't think there's nothing we can do. I think that it just takes knowledge and I shouldn't say experimentation. It takes knowledge and an understanding of how to get involved, where to get involved, who's in to the solutions, and what we can do. And I've done some study since that couple of year ago discussion point. And I don't think it's that we can't do anything. It's that we don't know how. And I still think that rings true. And Michelle Steeb's book, she's the author of Answers Behind the Red Door. MichelleSteeb.com is her book. And you can check it out and get it. But I want to bring this up, though, that there are solutions. And you know what? Michelle says that it starts with government. And as you heard her on the radio, she's not really a, you know, proponent of big government per se. She's not really political is kind of the point that I want to draw upon. But she acknowledges that a lot of this has, over decades, been put in the hands of government. Now, over time, can we take that back and have churches more involved and individuals more involved and volunteers and private sector solutions and philanthropy efforts? Absolutely. And should we move towards that? In my personal opinion, the answer is yes. I don't speak for Michelle. However, I will say this, though. You can't just wake up tomorrow and do that. And as I mentioned before on the radio a couple of years ago, if I wanted to start a homeless camp tomorrow, I can't. And we joke and say the government doesn't like competition. But really, this is a county issue. This is a federal issue because that's where the majority of the funding comes from right now. Now, you can say, well, we don't like that. It shouldn't be. And you may be right. But it is. And we got to live in the real, even though we teach to the ideal. The ideal is we'd all be good Christians and there'd be nobody homeless among us. That's the ideal. But when we don't do our duty as Americans, government eventually fills the vacuum, right? And that's what's happened for decades on end. And now we're going to have to work with government officials and work over time to change policies and make a difference. So believe it or not, President Trump is doing that. It's called expanding the toolbox. And it basically says reduce homelessness, expanding the toolbox. The whole of government response to homelessness. The plan shares strategies to increase self-sufficiency and focuses on trauma-informed care. By considering homelessness beyond the sole issue of housing, so the goal is to explore the root causes for each individual and family experiencing homelessness. Now, that's quite a bit of what Michelle said. All right. And it starts with expanding the toolbox. President Trump is starting to do something about this. She was kind of cautious because she doesn't want to make it a political or a one side issue. But going forward, we hope that we can expand options, that we can move to the private sector, that we can find ways forward where everybody can be involved and we can take the politics out of this. And I don't speak for Michelle, but as far as I understand, that's her hope. And that would be mine as well. Kurt, do you want to comment on the interview and comment on the progress the Trump administration is making?
Well, you know, it seems so many times, Sam, that the answer, at least in my opinion, lies in the kind of little phrase, make America great again. When you look at what used to be the way that homelessness was addressed, at least before the advancement of bigger and bigger and bigger government, you had the churches and the regular private citizenry simply participating in that in so many ways. You know, and you can talk about the intrusion of government at so many levels to take away the people's opportunities for, I guess you could say, charitable opportunities. You know, when you look at my lifetime and the movement of government, or the growth of government, where we've literally gone from government taking 5% of our earnings when I was born. You know, if you made $100, then they took about $5. Whereas now it's close to $60 out of every 100 that is, you know, consumed and, you know, eaten up by massive government at all levels. And they say that, you know, many people will argue that's because there are these social needs as well as other needs that need to be addressed. And I would simply suggest to you that, in my opinion, if you look at the way things used to be, when we had much less government and the churches and the people had much more of their own money to do with it what they felt moved to do, whether it was an individual case that they might have known of, it's a neighbor or someone that was in need, or, you know, in a bigger way that we've seen, you know, movements by churches, not only the one that we're a member of, but many others that, you know, on a regular basis, when there's a disaster, a hurricane, a tsunami, or whatever, it's rare to find churches not being the first, if not, you know, in the first few groups that are there on the ground with boots on the ground, as they say, helping to find the solutions and make a difference in people's lives. And we've talked about those stories where you see the government coming in and trying to stop somebody going and feeding the homeless on the beach or something and saying, oh, no, you don't have a permit for that or whatever. I mean, you know, things like that are just show you how much we've got to make America great again by returning to the, well, the way things were, Sam.
Well, there's so many things that can be done. You know, when you look at it, to get a home now is very expensive, Kurt. To have shelter is very expensive. If you go back to Thoreau, you know, he did an experiment, whatever. He lived 18 months out in the boonies with virtually nothing and went back to a very simple life. And we learned from that experience, really, that there's kind of four fundamental things that you need. You need a shelter. You need food. You need clothing. And you need some kind of a fuel to stay warm or whatever in the cold. And you know what? Those are kind of the four things you need: shelter, clothing, food, and fuel. And it really is that simple of a solution to provide some of the basics for these people. But because you have so much zoning, because you have so much regulation, I mean, if you're going to build a little shelter for somebody, it's got to be to, quote, international building standards, and it's got to this, and it's got to that. And, well, you're not allowed to really have a home near the city or in the county without electricity or without plumbing or with, you know, and by the time you do plumbing, then you say, well, it's not enough just to have plumbing. You got to follow, quote, international plumbing standards, or you got to build to this specification, or you've got to get a permit for this, and you've got to, you know, and before you know it, it's incredibly expensive. Even if you buy a lot, a little piece of ground in America these days, it's going to cost you thousands of dollars just to get hooked up to the electricity, just to get hooked up to the sewer system. That's if you're in the city, or thousands of dollars to get a septic tank put in if you live out in the country or whatever. And some of these things just cost a lot of money beyond the ability of, one, individuals who are homeless to handle it, and then beyond the ability for guys like me or you or others to even help them. I mean, it's just I can't provide thousands of dollars, give them a place. They won't be able to hold on to it. How do we create a long-term solution? And that's kind of where I think we really need to work, in my opinion, is to reduce some of these expenses, to reduce some of these regulations, to simplify the plan and say, hey, if I drive from, say, Montana all the way up at the corner or the border of Montana and what, Canada, and I drive all the way from there all the way down to, say, Texas or Florida, Kurt, there's a lot of space. You could build a lot of cities relatively easily. You could build homeless camps. Or can you? And I find that it's very, very, very difficult. And I've actually tried some of this stuff. Because I do care. This issue does matter. One of the most important things we can do in life is be our brother's keeper. Quick pause. Sam and Kurt in seconds.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
President Trump announced Thursday COVID-19 vaccines will start being distributed to Americans next week or the week after. Trump said the first rollouts will be sent to frontline workers, medical personnel, and senior citizens. Iron Mike Tyson, now 54 years old, is getting ready to go back into the ring to box.
Well, listen, I'm not trying to knock nobody out, like you said, but I'm trying to protect myself at all times.
Mike Tyson on GMA.
I've been getting in shape. I've been feeling good. My brother-in-law asked me that I want to fight somebody. I said, no way. Then the light went off in my head. I said, hey, but did they want to box me? Because the guy was an MMA fighter. And so he said, yeah. So I said, I'll box anybody.
Mike Tyson versus 1988 silver medalist Roy Jones Jr. Live at the Staples Center in Los Angeles Saturday night. The pay-per-view event will set you back about $50. Thanks for listening. This is USA Radio News.
Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in a capsule. Changing the world, one life at a time.
I've been taking vitamins off and on my whole adult life, and I've never seen any change, not like this, not since I've been on Balance of Nature. I used to take prescription medication for muscle aches and stuff. I don't take that anymore. I wish I'd have started it back when I first heard about it on the radio. And if I can give Balance of Nature any advice, keep it out on the radio, because I still hear these commercials from time to time, and I'm thinking, you know, you people need to listen up. I mean, I'm over 50. And, you know, your body starts wearing down. But Balance of Nature has literally changed my life. It really has.
Get a wide variety of all your daily recommended servings of whole fruits and vegetables without having to leave your home. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Call 1-800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code USA.
The Paris Climate Accord, very expensive with minimal results. Let's get the latest with USA Radio News' Dan Naraki.
President-elect Joe Biden has made climate change one of his top priorities, and he says he will rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement. President Trump pulled the United States from that treaty in 2017. Economist Stephen Moore says that leaving the accord was the right move and that going back to it is a policy that puts America last. He told Fox News that the deal does nothing to stop other big polluting countries at the expense of American industry and American jobs.
The Paris Climate Change treaty is a joke. I mean, the single biggest polluter in the world by far is China. And it doesn't require China to do anything for another 10 years. Meanwhile, we have to shut down our coal plants. We have to shut down our oil and gas facilities that employ, you know, millions of workers. We have to use more expensive energy while China and India and Russia lap behind our back. So I don't think it's a very wise thing to do.
From the USA Radio News Ohio Bureau, I'm Dan Naraki.
So I searched online, ladies and gentlemen. I just asked a simple question. Can I create a homeless tent camp? Oh, the results you get back are quite interesting. And here's what I get, Kurt. For the most part, the most scary point that I get back is this. Cities have enacted laws in recent years to prevent homeless people from living in their towns, to give law enforcement officers support towards this goal. Cities have made it illegal for people to live in their cars on streets. You can't park in parking lots and even on private property. In some cases, it's even illegal to tent camp in your own private property home backyard. So this is kind of the problem that we face, Kurt. And as I've studied this issue in depth, it's very difficult for the average individual to help, to do much about it, to make a difference. If I wanted to go ahead and create a camp way out in the middle of nowhere, first off, the land's owned by who knows who. It's very hard to get a hold of. I might buy a big tract of land out in the boonies somewhere for 320 acres, but I'm going to get a big fight by a county saying, well, wait a minute, you can't just build a city there. You can't just bring tons of people in. There are ordinances. Wait a minute, I'm in the county. Yeah, the county commission decides. There's zoning. You can't break it down into little pieces. Yeah, can't. So you got all kinds of rules. And then, oh, I got to get water. I got to get electricity. I got to. And no one wants this in their backyard. So this is a very serious issue, Kurt. And we've got a lot of work to unwind regulations and government involvement and everything else. But cities have enacted these laws. Can I create a homeless tent camp? A very interesting question. The answer is, for the most part, no, you can't, Kurt.
Well, it's a great point, Sam. And, you know, we've talked some about this in the past as we've, you know, looked at some of these different options for housing. And, you know, it's interesting to me to see you get these so-called government officials that are so concerned with, you know, the, quote, homelessness problem, if you will. And yet, well, their actions will literally cause that. You know, we've talked about these cases where you could you know, I mean, we have areas, and you mentioned zoning. We have areas in cities now where they have so-called zoning in effect, where you can have like these motor or mobile homes, or these you know, homes that aren't on a fixed foundation, if you will. Why not, you know, have much more, I guess you could actually say the word freedom when it comes to the use of the land. And you know, so many times we see things that would make life much better or much less expensive for folks when it comes to what were the things that you mentioned, the main things? You got to have fuel, food.
You got to have clothing, and you got to have shelter. Not in that order. Good. They're all kind of just as critical. I mean, I would say you need food first, clothing second, shelter, and then fuel to keep it warm enough, right?
Yeah, warm, or, you know, at least if you need to for cooling. But, you know, the bottom line is you got to have those four basic kind of things. And it seems like so many times, if you're going to have governments regulating the size of the lot, like you mentioned, you know, where you can put it, and how your house has to look, or, you know, whatever. I'm currently looking at some different options, just like for us. And, you know, if you want to have, say, a home with, you know, say a bigger home, it seems like a lot of times that I can see a bigger home will give you a better price per square foot. Simply because, you know, most of the time that works that way. Where you'd want to have, say, a few other apartments in it or something like that. Oh, you know, you've got these regulations to deal with. You know all about that. And you know about it when it comes to taking pieces of land and trying to say, hey, let's make this so friends of mine or my family can fit on it. You know, I don't know if you want to elaborate on certain things that you've seen, but, you know, like I've seen that to be the case. Little government officials, whether it's governors or even presidents, federal, state, county, whatever, they always want to hop in there. You just, you know, one of the main rules I want to suggest to people is don't ask your, you know, bureaucrats what you can do. You know, pretend like you're an American that's free to do those things. And I'm not talking about burning police buildings down or starting police cars on fire, but I am saying that we should act as free citizens to go forward and, you know, pretend at least that we are free to do the things that we should be able to do.
The three basics of human survival, they say, is food, clothing, and shelter. Okay? They're essential for our existence, if you will. And I add fuel to that because, again, you've got to be able to cook. You know, how do you get the food without fuel? You know, you won't have the ability to cook. But here's the problem. They say an additional list of basic needs, besides food, water, shelter, clothing, etc. To me, when you say food, it means water also, right? But they say modern lists emphasize a minimum level of the consumption of basic needs, not just food, water, and shelter, but also sanitation, education, and healthcare. And the problem with that, Kurt, is what you get is a battle of what becomes a basic need. And now we debate that until the cows come home. And that's kind of part of the problem, too, is we struggle with definitions. We struggle with basic needs. We struggle with what it means. If I wanted to create a camp out in the boonies, I mean, just drive out anywhere you go, out into the country, I don't know, an hour. So you're just in the boonies. And if I wanted to create a, you know, just say I got 300 acres, how do I get the ground? How expensive is it? Now, can I get water? Can I get, you know, any type of communications, internet or whatever? And you would say, well, internet's not a basic need. And in modern times, if you're going to be able to, you know, get a job of some kind, it might be, right? And so you go down this big list and you say it's very complex and expenses ratchet up in a hurry. And I'm personally doing an experiment with this right now, Kurt, right now. I'm in the middle of a grand experiment with land and what you can do and how expensive it is and how can you live minimalistically and how what are the choices? And it's very complex, sir. It's very hard to deal with this in a way that's meaningful and productive and et cetera. Are you there, Kurt?
Yeah, I'm just,
what do you think?
Just hoping you'll kind of elaborate on it. You know, you might as well. I remember years ago when Chuck Carter, you know, one of our, I don't want to say mentors or whatever, but we learned a lot.
He was certainly a mentor to us, without a doubt.
You know, I remember him talking about the, it seemed like it was a solar home kind of thing.
Yeah, he called it the ELU house.
Okay. You know, and it was basically a way that you could live a lot less, you know, expensively, and you could put these, you know, places pretty much anywhere. And, you know, and then, of course, we've talked about these, what do they call them? These storage, not storage units, but these container homes kind of thing. You know, there's just so many options, and yet... you know, many times the government wants to clamp down on that. So I'm just thinking if you're right in the middle of it, I'm kind of in the middle of, you know, as I mentioned, the idea of, you know, getting a bigger house, but making it so that several families can be there at the same time, you know, can live in that and use that space so that, you know, you're doing it a little more economically. I see it done probably illegally, you know, according to certain city regulations, et cetera, by many times those who, you know, some would call the Hispanic crowd, if you will, where they'll live in a, you know, a home and just share it. And, you know, they're pretty smart about using their means to make sure that everybody has a place. And that's one of the ways they get ahead, I think. What do you want to elaborate on your situation, or do you? Maybe
just
you don't
answering
want to...
phone calls, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
There you go. So we'll talk about it right after the pause, though. Kurt wants me to expand on my experiences, which I will do. We're going to have a whole series on this over the next several months and weeks and years as some of the things we're working on unfold. We'll share them with you. We're not shy. We're also going to talk to Dean, who has experienced homelessness quite a bit, who just called in. Hang tight. You're listening to Liberty Roundtable Live.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, "By having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids."
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about homelessness, a serious problem in the country. Dean from Utah chimes in. Hi, Dean.
Hi, Sam and Kurt. Anyway, he was talking about a couple years ago. I think it was a couple years ago. It was between Thanksgiving and December of 2018 when I called you and living in a tent over in American Fork on Fifth East. And anyway, I just I live below 50 near the lake. My parents had a farm down there since the late 1800s, and so I'm very familiar with that area, which is kind of destroyed now, in my opinion. But this abandoned field was abandoned ever since I was born and before. So some 62 years, this little field was abandoned, and it was tucked into right next to railroad tracks and abandoned property with trees around it, so nobody could really see. It wasn't bothering anybody. But anyway, it's virtually impossible to survive, in a homeless situation. You've got so many things going on. And in my case, I had no transportation. And so I'd have to walk wherever I went, and it was like a mile to the bus stop, you know, and then you're supposed to have money, you know, when you get on the bus, but it's a bus to nowhere.
So you know, let's be clear so people understand, you've been homeless for a long time, is that right?
Yeah, since I virtually got divorced in 94, pretty much homeless.
So you know, for 24 years, the headline that I'm writing for this, a homeless man, Dean, dials in and provides insight.
Yeah, and like I say, you're a target. You're a target for every person. If you're walking down the road, everybody's got 911 on speed dial, and you're going to be arrested for something. Because when a cop comes out, he's going to arrest you. And or give you a bunch of crap, you know. Shake you down and all this stuff, you know. See if
all right.
You
have
got
you listened
any.
To the whole program today?
Yeah, I have.
All right. What do you think of her ideas and proposals about sanctioned tent camp cities? About our point that, you know what, it's very hard to do something to help. People don't know what to do, how to do it. People are so far from it, they don't understand it. Government stands in the way with regulations and everything else to a great degree. What do you think of the whole scenario and discussion? If you've lived it for 25 years, I want to get your take and your input.
Yeah, that's the real problem, the government. And also, when people hand somebody to like money to like the Red Cross and all this stuff, and almost all places that have those 501(c)(3)s are just a laundering organization, money laundering organization. Is my theory on that. And I don't have the answers, but it needs to be a place where you can just go and relax and not worry about being kicked out the next day, kind of get your life in order and have something to do to be busy. And what I found, you know, through being around agriculture my whole life, if people could have a little plot of land where they could grow a garden, there's plenty of land still around this, like this Utah County area, that's vacant lots and stuff. where you virtually don't need any irrigation. But there's plenty of irrigation around here. And to just grow your own stuff, to have your own thing, and to be able to shower at the end of the day and lay your head down without worrying about having arrest warrants for you or the cops coming.
What about our general point? Hey, there's the four basics of human survival. That's food, clothing, shelter, and fuel. Is that a pretty good start? Is that right?
Yeah, but there's the problem with the food is how do you keep it? And how do you keep a good diet? The diet's the big thing.
And you're saying that because there's not an ability to cook unless you have fuel and a place to cook.
Right.
There's not ability to refrigerate, so you can't keep things long-term, et cetera, right?
Yeah, sanity, water to wash your dishes and stuff and cups. And, you know, I've been through the whole gamut of having a trailers and motor homes, and I'm in a garage right now, pretty comfortable here, but I've got to go, you know, a ways to use the restrooms and the showers and stuff. I got a friend that reached out that I've known that for years, and he's a wealthy man, and, you know, but then, you know, his employees see you out here, and everybody's curious about how you live and what you do, and so it brings spotlight on you. Then, like I was mentioned the other day, then the federal marshals come down here on this property and arrested my son for this meth distribution, supposedly a year ago. He has nothing to do with it. So now he's facing federal felony charges. They've let him out, but he's got so many restrictions on him. So we're going to try to get this out in the media.
All right, we can work on that.
Another
time. Certainly,
right.
There is, and the problem is, it becomes so many overlapping issues to where it's just impossible for people to understand it, to do
exactly.
Anything about it. I mean, it's hard to even comprehend. But for all intents and purposes, how accurate do you think our delivery's been on this, on the reality that people face?
Really accurate, and like I say, it takes a team of people to really understand it, and mostly the people that's been through it, you know, being in and out of the jail so many times. I meet these people down there, the jails, and one of my friends, Bill, first time I met him, he virtually homeless, clear back in 96, and I see him, he's in and out of there, been in and out of there 84 times, never had a felony, but wherever he goes, he'll get a trespass or something like that and back into jail. And they'll put him in there for the maximum without a good time. I don't know what they try to prove on that, but like he said, Utah County Jail is just a homeless shelter.
And that's kind of the problem that we point out. So the law becomes a big issue. The point that I made here about, hey, can I create a homeless tent camp? And they've enacted laws, and they've created law, you know, enforcement officers and police officers, and to give law enforcement officers, hey, they've made all this stuff illegal. And so everywhere you go as a homeless person, you're really breaking the law almost everywhere you go and everything you do just to try to exist. Is that the point, Dean?
Yeah, that's exactly the point. In fact, I've been supposedly trespassed from American Fork but they've dismissed all my charges that they've charged me with, but I was arrested at the cemetery to try to bury my son. And so I don't know how
a different son than the one that's been arrested, right?
Yeah, I had. I got three sons.
Understand that we're making sense here, folks.
Right.
We're not just babbling incoherency here. Poor Dean's been through a lot. He's had certainly problems with the law for decades. The problem becomes what can be done. Dean, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, he's polite. He's respectful. Kurt, what do you do in situations like this?
Well, at least once again, to me, I remember stories of that we've seen over the years where you see government, for example, somebody's gets arrested because they had like 37 welfare checks or, you know, they were driving around in a you know, brand new Cadillac or whatever. And, you know, if you get the government out of these things and lower the taxes so that the people themselves have their own money. So many times when people are taxed so much, they feel like, well, you know, I'd help, but the government's got all these programs, you know, and I can just barely make it having to pay all these taxes. So, you know, I'm going to leave that to them. Forced charity is not really the way that God intended charity to happen. And so what we need is, a stepping back in so many ways of making America great again, kind of plan where we basically get government out of those areas and let the churches and the individuals take that back over. Now, there's going to be big time pushback about that whole idea from the godless crowd, if you will, because what they want to do is replace God with government in so many ways, Sam. And so to me, it starts in so many areas, whether it's the control of land and the so-called zoning, type of thing, and or all the ideas that, what is required for somebody to live there. You know, I mean, how many bathrooms does each person have to have, and how much space, and all these different things. It's interesting that, an individual in jail can be housed in a very small area. And, if you consider, as far as I know, each cell has a bathroom. They don't have a kitchen. But, it's interesting that kind of, quote, zoning can be approved for living there in jail. And yet, if it's outside and you wanted to do a private sector kind of solution to the homeless problem, and you gave somebody that same amount of space, maybe a little more for a kitchen, you'd be some kind of a criminal, right?
Unfortunately, the answer is that is right. And by the way, I don't want anybody to think we made a deal with Dean to call in. He just happens to be a listener, and he just happens to be quite knowledgeable, and he happens to be homeless, and he's been so for a long time. I don't know Dean super well, but I have talked to him on the phone many times, and I've been familiar with and updated on his plight for quite some time. And I don't know what can be done. I don't know what I can do. I don't have the ability to let him, stay anywhere that I can afford or deal with. I don't mind helping out maybe with a couple of dollars or getting him, but I don't know. I don't have long-term sustainability for him. And if he's just going to continue to have brushes with the law, even if I get him a place to be, if he goes to jail, what good will that do? Now I've got a place that no one's in until he gets out. So what do you do about this? And the problems are many. And I don't want you to believe the solutions are easy, but I do believe there are solutions to this, Kurt. And I think it starts with the way the Savior taught us to be, to minister to one another. I do think it starts with kindness and judge not attitudes. I think it starts with a little bit at a time. I think it starts with being volunteers and getting involved and familiarizing ourselves with these issues. It also starts with education and training. It starts with kindness. And it starts with a desire to make a difference. That's my summation. Kurt, you want the final word?
I think you got it covered, Sam. Good work.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, we will keep you up to date on our experiments and what we're doing and how it's working out and everything else. I'll tell you some stories about this over the next several weeks and months from a personal involvement point of view. All right? We'll do it. Thanks for being alongside for the ride. Thanksgiving weekend. Spend time with your family. Spend time. Hashtag give thanks for all that we have. And then let's find a way to help others, shall we? For Sam and Kurt, we declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.